Today, we're talking about Scotland, New Scotland, and Old Scotland. New Scotland, and by that, I mean Nova Scotia, which is what we call it in Canada, well, they've passed the Financial Measures Act, and it's pretty terrible. Old Scotland has also passed some terrible legislation, and they have put into law an anti-crime bill that will most likely pave the way for other Western nations. We'll also be chatting with Alex Klusterman, a friend, a pastor in Peterborough, Ontario, and a professional coffee expert. If you're watching this episode, it means that you made it past the total solar eclipse without being raptured. Also, if you're watching this episode, it means you probably appreciate that last comment. It's April 11th. I'm Angie DiBartolo. That's Matt Halleck. And this is Liberty Dispatch.
Hey, hey, welcome back to Liberty Dispatch, broadcasting across enemy lines into the Canadian culture. As always, our shows are brought to you in partnership between Liberty Coalition Canada and Christian Week. LCC exists to establish Christ's justice and righteousness and to defend those who stand therefor. And Christian Week exists to provide a practical, balanced, hope-filled perspective on national and global issues. Easy for me to say. If you do appreciate what we're doing here over at Liberty Coalition Canada and on Liberty Dispatch, the show, we would recommend that you leave us a donation over at libertycoalitioncanada.com at libertycoalitioncanada.com/donate. You can scan that helpful QR code at the bottom. And as always, if you have comments, questions, and or concerns, you can reach out to us directly at mailbag@libertycoalitioncanada.com. That's mailbag@libertycoalitioncanada.com. Andrew, we've got some exciting things coming right up just around the corner. Why don't you tell our listeners all about them?
Yeah, we're about a week and a half away from our first conference event in Weston, Nova Scotia on April the 20th. So it's just over a week, just about a week and a half. Registration for the Weston, Nova Scotia conference, our Politics in the Pulpit conference, will close on April the 16th. That'll be the last day, the Tuesday, to register for Weston, Nova Scotia. But you can also join us at Ingersoll, Ontario on May the 4th. Registration for that will probably close at the end of April, on April the 30th, or Westminster, BC on May the 25th at New West Community Church. Make sure you register at libertycoalitioncanada.com/politics-in-the-pulpit. Seats are filling up, especially for Weston. You may have to hurry up and get your ticket if you haven't already. If you want more reasons other than an essential, necessary conference that we think will strengthen the church in Canada and help Christians think biblically about politics and culture, and then we'll tell you about some of the vendors that are going to be there as well. We will have the Christian Heritage Party, Action for Canada, the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform, and the Ezra Institute will have representation. It's going to be a great time of learning, growing, and strengthening these political and cultural engagement muscles for Christians in the country. Register today, libertycoalitioncanada.com/politics-in-the-pulpit. You're not going to want to miss this. You also need to avail yourself not only of really beneficial conferences, but really delicious coffee too, because burnt coffee is gross. And as we'll be learning later in the episode, it makes the most amount of sense to buy really, really good coffee from people who share your values. So stop buying your bitter pagan coffee from people who hate you. Instead, you should be buying your coffee from Resistance Coffee, roasting delicious fuel for freedom. You should try their fossil fuel, a custom blended dark roast for those who enjoy the bold flavor without the burnt aftertaste of communism. Or how about Trigger Happy, a smooth single origin medium roast from Brazil for the truth tellers? How do you get some of this coffee? Well, you head to resistancecoffee.com and make sure you use promo code LIBERTY10. That's the word LIBERTY, number 10, to get 10% off your entire order at checkout. That's coffee, merch soon, some hats, maybe some mugs. We got some new merch coming hopefully soon. ResistanceCoffee.com. Use that promo code Liberty10 and get fueled for the resistance today. So we're talking about Scotland.
Indeed, we are.
We're talking about are you Scottish as well?
Oh, you know it. You know it. Of course.
I know you're Scottish.
Robertson. My Scottish clan is the Robertson clan.
That beard and that red hue gave it away.
Yeah.
So we're talking about Scotland today.
Indeed.
And we're gonna be looking at New Scotland or Nova Scotia and Old Scotland, which is just Scotland. That's just regular old Scotland.
Scotia.
Yeah. Regular, New Nova Scotia and older Scotia. I don't know.
Scotia, yeah.
Yeah. Latin was never one of my strengths. In any event, first we're going to be talking about Bill 419, the Financial Measures Act. I mentioned this on last week's news brief as something that was being debated,
Andrew,
in Nova Scotia Parliament.
Can I just say how important it is that we're doing the politics in the pulpit conference in Nova Scotia, giving what's actually coming down the pike over there in God's providence, that the timing could not be better for Nova Scotians to get active today in politics. It could not.
Chatting with Marty Elson, who's the pastor at Weston Christian Fellowship, the host church. And I was discussing with him what we're going to be discussing today. And he said, well, I mean, they're doing it because they care about us, so I guess that's fine, was a sarcastic remark in terms of the way it's been framed. So we mentioned it in last week's news brief. The Financial Measures Act has passed in Nova Scotia. It has received royal assent last week. So this is now law in Nova Scotia. Now, here's the scene inside of Nova Scotia Parliament regarding the passing of this bill.
The results of the recorded vote are as follows: yeas 28, nays 17.
The motion carries.
Bill 419, an act respecting certain financial and other government measures.
Yep.
Order that the bill do pass, and the title is read by the clerk. Order that the bill be engrossed.
Yay, tyranny. Yay. Now, hold on. Before we give comment, we actually were blessed enough to have a local correspondent in Nova Scotia watching this happen as the bill was passed, giving her honest assessment of the proceedings. Let's play that video now. This will be good for our audience.
This is why people donate to us, Andrew, because of this intrepid reporting.
Yeah.
In order to ensure the security and continuing stability, the Republic will be reorganized into the First Galactic Empire for a safe and secure society.
This is how liberty dies, with thunderous applause.
I'm
costs us a lot of money. We need some donations.
It brings to mind that office meme where you have the two pictures and it's like a corporate wants you to tell us the difference between these two pictures, and then the meme is when the person from the office says they're the same picture. We just saw the same picture, right? Yeah. For a safe and prosperous future, we must pass the Financial Measures Act. So what exactly is the Financial Measures Act? You might be wondering, and why does it matter? I don't live in Nova Scotia. I don't fish. I don't eat seafood. Why do I care what happens on the East Coast? Well, first of all, this is a very lengthy bill that we've linked to, and there are three really main purposes of the bill, especially when you look at the Nova Scotia government website as they discuss the bill. So what they do is what they want is to establish three things. First of all, they want to establish a children's sports and arts tax credit, which they say will help parents or legal guardians offset the costs of their child's registration and expenses in sports and arts programs. Second, they want to create the More Opportunities for Skilled Trades program, which they say will return personal provincial income tax paid on the first $50,000 of earnings for eligible people under the age of 30 in sectors where there are identified labor shortages. So artificially working the market. Third, they want to have a non-resident deed transfer and property taxes act, which they say will help make housing more available and attainable for Nova Scotia residents. Now, as for the first purpose, the bill, in the text of the bill, what one of the things they're going to be creating is the Office for Children and Youth in Nova Scotia. So between that and the tax credit, you're basically just looking at more bureaucracies, more theft, and more spending in the province. And this initiative will cost an estimated $4.7 million, which is a lot for Nova Scotia. Nova Scotia is not Ontario. $4.7 million is a lot of... That's a lot of baskets of cod in Nova Scotia, okay? Now, the second purpose will be to create more regulations and more employees to manage them, right? This is what it comes down to. If you have new programs and new contact points and new work that needs to be done, what you need are more people and more tax consumers and more regulations. There are also bits in the bill that seem to give elected officials pretty vague powers, including this statement that pops up a few different times in the bill, though it's worded slightly differently in some of the places. This is what it says, quote, "The minister may make such regulations as are in the minister's opinion required to implement this section fully and effectively." So essentially, the minister can do whatever they want if they think that it's necessary. I mean, that's okay. We haven't seen anything go wrong with that in the last 4 years in our country. So why would anyone be concerned at all? But the real concern about the bill was addressed in our news brief last week. And the real concern of the bill is Section 110.
Yeah, Andrew, this is truly the part of the bill that is the most disturbing and the most concerning for Nova Scotians. And this is how it is worded in the explanatory notes at the beginning of the bill. Let's read that. It says, Clause 110 amends the Personal Health Information Act, the PHIA, to allow the governor in council to make regulations requiring personal health information to be disclosed for the purposes of planning and management of the health system, resource allocation, and creating or maintaining electronic health record programs and services. The actual clause says this in Section 110. It will be, quote, requiring custodians and classes of custodians to disclose personal health information to the minister or a person acting on behalf of the minister for the purposes of planning and management of the health system, resource allocation, and creating and or maintaining electronic health records programs and services. And the question that we have to ask is, why on earth is that connected to the Financial Measures Act? Something fishy is afoot. Why would personal private medical information be required to give it, to be given to the state? That is the question. And this obviously sets up an extremely concerning precedent, Andrew. Not only in Nova Scotia, but across the country, because things like this, as we will see later in the program with Scotland and some of the legislation they're passing, these can tend to be the predicate for other provinces, other jurisdictions for passing similar legislation as well. So here's a video of the audio clip that we played on the news brief for last week in regards to this Financial Measures Act. I do think it is illuminating, and I do think you will appreciate checking it out. So let's take a look.
I'm Dr. Gus Grant. I'm the Registrar and CEO of the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Nova Scotia. pronouns he, him.
I'm David Fraser. I'm a privacy lawyer with McGinnis Cooper, working with the College of Physicians and Surgeons. He, him.
Whenever you're ready.
Thank you. My submissions will relate solely to Section 110 of the Financial Measures Act. This is the which offers new language to the Personal Health Information Act. If passed, Section 110 is going to fundamentally change the nature of the patient-doctor relationship and the professional duties of physicians. This new law will require all physicians to enable access to their medical records to the minister. For physicians, this creates a new professional legal duty, and for patients, it means the entirety of their medical records will be accessible to government. I see it as the responsibility of the college to speak on behalf of the public, which I would expect is largely unaware of this seemingly innocuous amendment and its potential consequences. The Financial Measures Act, by its name and in substance, would seem to have little to do with the private matters members of the public have disclosed to their physician. Another question, what could we learn? What are potentially some of the unintended consequences? We could learn that different patients have placed different values on their privacy. I would not be surprised to learn that the pilot will demonstrate that younger patients are thrilled with the app, untroubled that their health information sits in the government's hands. I would also not be surprised to learn that older folks feel differently. The importance of privacy may vary according to age and other factors. When this becomes law, how will the groups I just described respond to the surprise of learning that their medical records are now accessible to government? How will they respond to hearing their physicians and other healthcare providers are required to give their personal health information to government? Will they protest that their private lives have been disclosed to government without their consent? Will this break trust with physicians?
So there you have it, Andrew. A sleepy presentation of very disturbing fact. Mm-hmm. Also, come on. Why are we doing pronouns at the beginning? Come on.
They're told. I know. They were told
that's
to.
Totally absurd. Yeah,
so that lets you know where the Nova Scotia legislature is when they require your pronouns to be announced before you speak.
I wouldn't go along with that. But yeah, it does show you the state of things. And the crazy part is, Andrew, is what he's saying is indeed the case. It's extremely disturbing that this, what some people have called a sacred relationship, this very private personal relationship between doctor and patient, it now has the state and its bureaucracy standing in the same room with Nova Scotians because of the passing of the bill. And that is the discerning part of the legislation, as far as I can tell. But it's not surprising, right? Because we've seen this happen over the last 3 years, the trajectory of the state just, again, in every area of life, slipping its tentacles. But it's exceedingly dangerous, as we've seen, when the government and the medical industry are one and the same. We know how that leads to Lysenkoism and anything but sound, proper medicine. And the people who are really the ones who will suffer at the hands of it are the unsuspecting patients who are going to have a lot of their private information disclosed to the ever-watching eye of Big Brother, and are ultimately going to be just put in the grip of this weird industrial medical complex with the state backing it. It's crazy. But anyways, this is from True North News. When Bill 419 was debated in the legislature, numerous MLAs sounded alarms about Clause 110 of the bill, which we just read, pointing to the college's previous concerns. Quote, "There are bad actors everywhere. The government needs to ensure that Nova Scotians have the confidence that their personal information will not be leaked out somewhere. As it is, we are left with, oh, just trust us. Quite frankly, seeing some of the shenanigans that I have seen of late, how can we trust? It boggles the mind, said liberal MLA Kelly Regan. NDP MLA Claudia Schender echoed Regan's concerns. The provision is quite clear. The minister or her designate may have access to all medical records of patients. All records. Let that sink in. A conversation about fertility, about substance abuse, about gender reassignment, about anything visible directly to the minister, said Schender. Despite the objections, and these are bipartisan objections, I should add, the government rejected efforts to amend the bill and reconsider the contentious clause. So there you have it.
You know what? Even though they voiced their differences, I wouldn't be surprised. I haven't seen the actual roll call, but I wouldn't be surprised if they voted in favor. Right. A really good example of this is Anthony Housefather in Parliament, who, I mean, recently with the way that the Parliament has dealt with the whole Israel-Hamas nonsense, with the way it adopted the NDP's let's recognize Hamas as a state. Oh, sorry, Palestine's a state. Oh, we need to pull it back. Housefather came out strongly saying, this is bad. I'm Jewish. I don't know if there's a place for me. And then I just read an article a few days later. He's like, no, I'm going to stay in caucus. Right. Or all these liberal yeah. MPs that say, this is bad stuff. This legislation's dangerous. And then what they do, they just vote in favor because they're whipped. They're whipped yeah. by the party to go along with it. And this, it's not just them. So we just watched a video of Dr. Gus Grant, who is the president of the College of Physicians in Nova Scotia, asking very reasonable questions and seemingly in opposition to the bill. So you would think that after the bill is passed, Dr. Grant will be voicing his displeasure. He'll be saying, listen, this isn't good. I said this was a bad idea. This is going to, like he said, this will permanently affect the patient-doctor relationship. How can they trust it? You would think he would say that. But what is it that he actually had to say after the bill was passed? The same man who raised these sharp concerns. So he might not be an elected official. He might not be an MLA. But given his position, he also clearly was whipped into now saying the right thing and going along with the narrative, knowing that his head's on the chopping block. So he was allowed to stand up for a little bit and say, this is bad. But then he was told by his handlers, now you need to sit down and shut up and you need to accept it. So this is what he said here. This is also from True North News. After the bill's passage, Grant changed his tune, saying he was assured through conversations with the premier and deputy minister that the authority would not be abused. Right. That's what it was. It was more like, buddy, shut up and just let it go. This is how it's going to be. Don't talk. Don't come against us anymore or you're fired. That's probably what happened. We know this is the case because this is precisely what happened with doctors in Ontario who dared speak up against the COVID jab. They were told you better sit down and not say anything publicly or privately or your license is taken away from you. So this is what he actually said, Dr. Grant, quote, when I appeared before the Law Amendments Committee, I advanced the position that the minister's access to personal health information should be restricted to only aggregate de-identified data, he said. Continuing, the government disagreed with our proposed language, but did so only after genuine, earnest consideration, which is a bunch of garbage. They didn't genuinely or earnestly consider his opposition. He continues, I believe the college was fully heard and our submissions were thoroughly considered. He doesn't actually believe that. He's just saying what he was told to say. Grant said that the government had committed to addressing his concerns by ensuring patient confidentiality and the integrity of the doctor-patient relationship, that it would be preserved through alternative measures. Right. I mean, just imagine that. I know it says that we're going to require all of their personal medical information, but don't worry. Through some other little, you know, sleight of hand trick, some other shell game, everything will be fine. I don't even see how any person could believe that. But he did. But again, he probably doesn't actually believe it. He's just being told to say what he is. He continues, specifically, the government committed to putting together a standing committee to inform regulations and data governance, particularly as they pertain to access and use of personal health information. The college has been invited to sit at that table, said Grant. So the answer from the government to him is another body, some more people, some more money, some more bureaucracy, some more red tape, just more. Yeah. And you can sit down. I mean, you can sit down the same way I tell my 7-year-old to sit down at the table when the adults are talking, which is be quiet because this isn't your time for conversation. But you can be at the table. You can have some of the grapes for sure while we're after dinner. No problem is what they told him. And this, so the bill has all these problems. It's just more communism. It's more large managerial state. Mm-hmm. It's more wasteful spending. It's the state saying, parents, you don't know how to take care of your kids. Mm-hmm. Your kids want to play hockey and they want to go, they want to do music, but you can't take care of your kids. So don't worry. We'll steal money from you so that we can create programs so that we do a better job of encouraging your kids to grow in the arts than you currently are. And that's part of the bill. That's not even the worst part of the bill, yeah. But it's part of the bill.
Yeah. And I mean, the question that we have to ask our friends in Atlanta, Canada is like, guys, how socialism worked out for you? You guys have been languishing forever and a day. And your first alternative was let's have this massive socialistic state take on a bunch of the responsibility for making sure can succeed as an economy in Atlantic Canada. And it's done a terrible job in everything that it's done all the time. And listen, the economy of Atlantic Canada has been stagnant to beyond poor for a long time, dating back to before, you know, you and I were alive, Andrew. It's been really, really tragic. And yet they keep doing the things that will ensure that the economy continues to be stagnant. They keep giving the state more and more control over things. And it's just mind-boggling to see.
Well, because Atlantic Canadians suffer from Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah.
And well, they continue at this point, to support. To they continue to support and vote in their abusers because their abusers have created a system where they've believed, oh, we can't help ourselves, only the state can help us, which is, I mean, the numbers of the numbers in terms of vote for Liberal and NDP in Atlantic Canada is pretty outstanding. And the reason is because everyone needs to be, like, so many people need to be on welfare and government assistance. And you're not going to bite the hand that feeds you. You're going to continue to vote in the people who are taking care of you. And this is just another example of them saying, listen, we're going to take care of you. We're going to take care of your kids. Like the bill, we're going to take care of your kids by making sure they have access to sports and arts. We're going to take care of small business owners and making sure that they have the, you know, the grants and the money available to do what they need. We're also going to make sure that you, because you're not responsible, but we're going to make it easier for you to buy a house. We're going to take, and then also trust us to protect you with your private medical information. It's just this overgrowing managerial state that says, we'll be dad, we'll be God, we'll take care of you. You can't take care of yourself. And Atlantic Canadians continue to say, yes, father.
Yeah.
And they voting for these people.
And I think that also just highlights something that I think we've talked about on the show before. You know, a lot of the conversation that we had over lockdowns and mandates and stuff like that, in talking to even Christians, like, oh, I have to be skeptical of the idea that I want to fight for my freedom because, you know, that's somehow a sinful urge that exists in man. And we have to really tamp down that freedom loving urge. But actually, the testimony that you get from scripture is it's actually the opposite, that people love the comfort and security that comes with bond servitude, that comes with being a slave, right? And that's what we're seeing over and over and over again. And that's why, though it boggles the mind that this is continuing to happen in Atlantic Canada, what it's just showing is something very similar to what we're seeing in the Exodus, yeah. Right? God's people are freed from the land of slavery in Egypt under the harsh rule of the Egyptian Pharaoh, but yet they quickly want to go back to Egypt under slavery in their shackles because of the responsibility that comes with dynamic freedom under God. And that is sadly what we're seeing in Atlantic Canada. And maybe it's just partly because our friends over there are so agreeable that they don't know how to stand up and push back. But dear friends, hate your shackles, throw off the fetters, turn to Christ and be free. That's our call to many of our friends in Atlantic Canada.
And come to the Politics in the Pulpit Conference if you're in Nova Scotia.
Absolutely.
I'm sure we're going to be talking a little bit about this. So let's move on. According to JP Morgan Chase, roughly a third of new businesses quit within their first 2 years. But with the support of a proven franchise system, on average, a franchise business has a higher survival rate than an independent business. Pro Fleet Care is a franchise organization that is dedicated to helping people find financial freedom and take control of their livelihood through good workmanship and honest business practices. With a 40-year proven business model, Pro Fleet Care is a unique and comparatively low startup cost business in the growing rust protection industry. Low initial investment, low overhead cost, good margins, training and business mentorship, and an established brand are some of the benefits that come along with joining Pro Fleet Care. If you're interested in joining Pro Fleet Care's franchise organization, go to profleetcare.com, or you can call Greg Laurie, not Greg Laurie, the Harvest Billy Graham pastor guy. No, this Greg Laurie didn't flake on COVID and isn't going woke. This my friend Greg Laurie, L-A-W-R-I-E. You can call him at 905-741-5316. We're actually planning on having Greg come on the show next week to talk a little bit, not just about Pro Fleet Care, who's a new sponsor for us, but really why this model is attractive and something that Canadians should consider. If you're thinking, my employer, I don't necessarily know if it's a good idea for me to be with these people. Who knows when the next HR mandate rainbow madness will come down. Maybe you're thinking, I need to take more responsibility. I want to be my own boss, but I don't want to create something from scratch. I don't want to do the something from out of nothing, to have an existing structure in place for me to be able to take it and run with it, to be able to run a business, to be my own boss, to set my own schedule, to kind of drive my own sales, but not having to do all the initial work of setup, then maybe this is something you should consider. So profleetcare.com, or contact Greg at 905-741-5316. And again, look for next week's episode of The Dispatch. Hopefully we will be interviewing Greg to talk more about it. But we move on. So now we will be traveling over the Atlantic Ocean from New Scotland back to Old Scotland. And even though it's Old Scotland, the next story is kind of a glimpse into the future of Canada and a lot of the West, because as Matt mentioned, after we'd recorded the news brief last week, which you didn't hear because we weren't recording, but I heard it, is that once one Western nation puts one of these wicked laws into place, it kind of opens the floodgates for other nations to say, oh, we can do that too. Now, if it's accepted there, if that's a Western English-speaking nation that's a part of the Commonwealth, then we can do that too.
And we better get on board, right? Come on. We don't want to be left.
You better get on board, laddies. Yeah, better get on board, laddies. So the law went into effect last Monday. And I want to read from a section of the law, the new hate crime law, titled Offenses Related to Stirring Up Hatred. I have to pause before I read this and say, this as a word, as a phrase, as a category for legislation, stirring up hatred. How do you really quantify that? Stirring up hatred. It seems so vague. It seems like trying to nail jello to a wall. It seems like we're just going to use words so that we can interpret it however they want, which is probably the intention. But here's the section, offenses related to stirring up hatred. Quote, a person commits an offense if the person, one, behaves in a manner that a reasonable person would consider to be threatening, abusive, or insulting. And by reasonable, they mean a rabid, purple-haired gender studies professor. That's what they mean by reasonable person, not an actual reasonable person of sound mind. So if a reasonable person believes, oh, that's threatening, that could be an offense. Or two, a person communicates to another person material that a reasonable person would consider to be threatening, abusive, or insulting, and or in doing so, the person intends to stir up hatred against a group of persons based on the group being defined by reference to race, color, nationality, including citizenship, or ethnic or national origins, or a reasonable person would consider the behavior or the communication of the material to be likely to result in hatred being stirred up against such a group. Oh, so it's not even that it is stirring up hatred, but it may, perhaps, might stir up hatred in the future. This, by the way, is very similar to the wording of Bill C-63 here in Canada. Oh, you think it might happen. It may, perhaps, there's a chance, there's a possibility. Up, you're under house arrest for a year. That's
pre-crime, Andrew.
So,
that's pre-crime.
Yeah, pre-crime. It's Minority Report. Yeah, it's Minority Report. Seriously. And in this instance, the three albino, bald, awkward people in the pool in Canada are Justin Trudeau, Jagmeet Singh, and we'll just throw Pierre Poilievre in there as well. He looks like he could have been one of those three pre-crime psychics. I'm talking about the movie. I've never read the book, but I'm talking about the movie. And you and I are Tom Cruise. You'll be Tom Cruise. You can be Tom Cruise. Thanks. And then I'll be, I don't know who the other character would be. I'll be Colin Farrell, because he, even though he was, you know, he was well-meaning, but he just tried to do his best. And then at the end, and I hate to ruin the movie, but as he's trying to do the investigation, he ends up getting shot at the end by the real bad guy. Anyways, so contain the real bad guys is Klaus Schwab. So let's continue.
We don't need to do the spoiler alert, right?
Yeah, I'm just, yeah. So anyways, Minority Report. So continuing, that was quite the squirrel moment. Okay, yes. So back in the bill here. A person commits an offense if the person, one, behaves in a manner that a reasonable person would consider to be threatening or abusive, or communicates to another person material that a reasonable person would consider to be threatening or abusive, and in doing so, the person intends to stir up hatred against a group of persons based on the group being defined by reference to a characteristic mentioned in subsection 3. I'll just say, how do you know the person intends to stir up hatred? Again, this is not just pre-crime. This is now the Ministry of Truth in 1984 that's able to read your thoughts and know what you're thinking and know your intentions without them actually being the case. So the characteristics are age, disability, religion, or in the case of a social or cultural group, perceived religious affiliation, sexual orientation, transgender identity, variations in sex characteristics. That's from the new law. Now, a conviction of someone who commits a hate crime offense could lead to a fine and a prison sentence of up to 7 years in a Scottish prison. I don't know what they're like. I mean, they, instead of waterboarding, do they do haggis boarding? Like, is that they pour haggis and you're choking on it until you finally give it up? Or is it like what they did in Braveheart where they do the disembowelment? Is that what a Scottish? I don't know. I got movies on the brain. I got movies on the brain today, because we're living in a dystopian novel. Mm-hmm. Like we're living in a post-apocalyptic sci-fi novel or sci-fi movie, and that's why I think I'm so closely connected to movies, because this is all fake. This is like a fiction movie come to real life. So it's like we're in a movie. So I'm just excusing my behavior.
I mean, we are dealing with delusional Marxists who make believe for adults. Like, that's what they.
So Hollywood. We're dealing with Hollywood.
There's a reason that actors are Marxists, because they live in make believe land. Same with Marxists. Speaking of movies and producers and authors, well, J.K. Rowling spoke out against this bill coming into effect, and she's actually made mention of in a piece from the New York Times that we're going to look at right now. So this is an opinion piece on the law from the New York Times. J.K. Rowling, the Harry Potter author, who has been criticized as transphobic for her comments on gender identity, said the law was, quote, wide open to abuse by activists, and took issue with its omission of women. Miss Rowling, who lives in Edinburgh, said in a lengthy social media post on Monday that Scotland's Parliament had placed, quote, a higher value on the feelings of men performing their idea of femaleness, however misogynistically or opportunistically, than on the rights and freedoms of actual women and girls, unquote. Quote, I'm currently out of the country, but if what I've written here qualifies as an offense under the terms of the new act, she added, I look forward to being arrested when I return to the birthplace of the Scottish Enlightenment. Rishi Sunak, the conservative so-called Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, expressed support for Miss Rowling a day after the law went into effect, telling the British newspaper The Telegraph that people should not be criminalized for stating simple facts on biology. We believe in free speech in this country. Yeah, not really, Rishi, come on. And conservatives will always protect it. Man, how, I think...
They don't believe in free speech in the UK. What a joke.
It is a total joke. But of course, you know, the British will, or the English will always take their shots at the Scottish, no matter whenever they can get the chance. And I am struck, though, Andrew, is it not the case that I think the direness of our current cultural moment in the West is not so much highlighted by the empty-headed, corrupt, evil individuals who are forwarding the cultural revolution, but the opposition thereunto? Because apparently Rishi Sunak and Pierre Poilievre and Donald Trump are the best we can do at mounting a counterattack to this Maoist cultural revolution. And the problem is none of these people are at all conservative. In fact, in many ways, they share the same world and life view with very, very, very limited differences to the same people who are thrusting us into the cultural revolution that we are desperately trying to avoid right now. So, I mean, regardless of who it is, whether it's the most conservative person in the world, the answer is never politics, in the sense that you can't fix a cultural problem politically. But even, you know, we're in the position that our cultures have drifted so far that we don't even have representatives of a conservative worldview in the parties that ostensibly call themselves conservative parties. It's crazy, Andrew, but here we are, 2024. I guess it's to be expected.
Well, and it's I would say it's even worse than that, where it's not only that these are the people that are representing the so-called conservative parties, is I believe that we are in a position, especially in Canada. In the States, it's a little bit different. In the States, you still have some congressmen and senators that are pretty good, right? Yeah. You have some ones that are pretty good that I think they're trustworthy men of integrity. In Canada, I would say that if a truly conservative person were to aspire to be a part of the Conservative Party, they would not be allowed to. If they snuck in, they'd be removed from caucus. But
didn't we see that with Garrett Van Dorlen?
That's exactly the point. Right. Here's a real conservative person.
Yeah.
So what is Poilievre
do? One of the most conservative writings in the nation, right? Like
he does something that you're not supposed to do. So apparently, the party leader is not supposed to come out in favor of one potential candidate over another. Mm-hmm. But the fact that Paul Liev did come out in opposition to Geert Van Dorlen because of his anti-abortion position, that lets you know what the Conservative Party thinks about real conservatives. They no longer belong in the Conservative Party. Yeah. And any opposition to the far extreme left progressives that have been presented, you know, Donald Trump, or even, listen, I personally like Maxime Bernier. I do. But what he stands for in terms of values and policy, much of it is still very, very anti-Christ. Very much so. And so the best that we've been able to reproduce, the reason why you have all of these awful conservatives is because one of the things that Christians have done, that real conservatives has done, have just totally disengaged. Yeah. And said, just let the culture fall apart. If I could, so I don't have a problem with shameless plugs and promotion. So because I don't, I have an article that I just released today titled "Sawing Off the Branch You're Sitting On." And I talked about the video making its rounds of Richard Dawkins saying he's a cultural Christian and basically, please know anything but Islam. Christianity's good, but I don't believe it. And Christian belief is silly and I'll never be a believer, but I like all the benefits. And I said that what Richard Dawkins is saying is akin to someone saying, man, I love these cookies. They're absolutely delicious cookies. They're fantastic. However, I don't believe that the baker exists. And if you have a recipe for the cookies, I reject the recipe and want nothing to do with it. But I love the cookies. They're delicious. So there's a whole inconsistency in Dawkins. But what he's basically saying in this video clip is, and it's silly, the God hater understands that Christian nationalism, the way we rightly define it, is a good thing. He wants a Christian nation. He wants people who believe that God's law should come to bear in our legal system and in our values, that's a good thing. So the atheist understands it. The atheist understands that the worst, that because Christians were engaged for so many centuries, we have inherited this tremendous blessing that's Western culture. But because Christians at some point decided to disengage, now as we're seeing that inheritance whittle away to nothing, where the moorings that held our culture together or the foundations are now rotted out because of progressive termites, now you even have atheists recognizing, oh, it's actually better. We don't want a secular nation. We don't want a humanist nation. We don't want a Muslim nation. We want a Christian nation. That's better, please. Can we have that? Because and to the shame of Christians, many Christians, they don't understand that.
Yeah. Well, because, and I think this is what a lot of people are waking up to. I mean, Dawkins would be one of them. Douglas Murray has said a similar thing, right? A gay
James agnostic, Lindsay.
James yep. Lindsay. That Christianity has internal immunity to the virus that is cultural Marxism. And in fact, it is the only worldview that has that internal immunity, because at root, as we always say on the program, the culture war is a proxy for a religious war. So it's because it's the true religion grounded in the person and work of the true God, it is the only system that provides true immunity to a satanic apostate pretender like the cultural Marxist worldview. And it turns out a secular humanistic order, which is also Antichrist, cannot provide the same defense because it is already succumbed to the very disease of autonomy that is even just further down the line as expressed in this cultural Marxist moment. So that's why you see all these people against interest start to realize, oh, without the bulwark of Christendom, we have no way to stop the coming revolution.
They think to their folly that secular humanism and classical liberalism can account for the blessings and the freedoms that we have without realizing that they implemented these unbiblical ideologies long after Western culture had been established for centuries, grounded upon Reformation principles. So the Reformation takes root and then begins. The Reformation really is the seed of Western culture proper. And after a couple centuries of Reformation principles working themselves out through Europe and into North America a little bit, then all of a sudden people say, wow, look how effective we are. We don't need God anymore. We don't need religion anymore. Yeah, and then they implement these new worldviews and they think, wow, look at this. We've seen advancements in medicine and technology and the elevation of rights for women. And it's the answer is secular humanism. But they don't realize that all it is it's this would be analogy. It's like a giant, this massive giant that is has a little child upon its shoulders. And the giant is walking across an ocean, getting effectively from one side to the other. And the child, who is secular humanism, thinks, wow, look, I'm doing it. Not realizing that he's actually slowly choking and killing the giant by wrapping its legs around his throat. And the giant that's been carrying this child forever is starting to die down in the water. And the child has been thinking, wow, look at me go. I'm so great. I'm so strong. Not realizing it's been actually killed, or it's been a part of killing the thing that has gotten it this far. And now that the giant is submerged and the child is half underwater, like Dawkins, now they're saying, please, we need another
help.
We're drowning. We didn't realize that it was this bad. And what's, again, I want to bring this back to a point I made. It's shameful that the atheists get this and Big Eva doesn't get this.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It's pretty embarrassing.
I just want to make one historical note, though, to what you're saying, because it, tracking from the Reformation through the Enlightenment is proper. But I also want to just point out a fact that the Renaissance came before the Reformation, and the Renaissance was the seed of really humanism, right? It was a more religious humanism, but it nevertheless had the seed of autonomy in it in the Renaissance. But the Renaissance only led to further degradation and acceleration, that kind of a principle of autonomy that was in the Renaissance, of medieval Christendom. It accelerated, and the Reformation was the necessary cultural critique and reform of society back to a Godward faithfulness that needed to take place. And it really won the day over that autonomy of the Renaissance. But that seed that was planted in the Renaissance ended up being victorious in the Enlightenment, overthrowing the fruit of the Reformation. Another note too is late Middle Ages Renaissance. That was also led to a period of even more centralized power and control in government. That you have the argument of the divine right of kings and extreme despotism and stuff like that. As we even come from a more decentralized time in the Middle Ages period. You see that ramping up more and more. That also then led to a lot of what we saw in the Reformation. So again, the principle of autonomy leads to tyranny and slavery. And the only hope for escape from that is Reformation and revival. It's been done in the past. It's the very thing we're calling for now. And it can only take place by repenting, turning to Christ, building our lives and our culture on that solid rock.
So if you're tired of spending money with big tech titans censoring voices of freedom, like HubSpot or Salesforce, you should check out SalesNexus. We've switched over to SalesNexus and we love it. I am grateful for these friends and for the work that they do. SalesNexus is a complete business marketing and sales solution that will not tell you what you should say or believe. Try it yourself at salesnexus.com and get two users for the price of one with the promo code Liberty. That's salesnexus.com. Use the promo code Liberty. So we have a treat for all of you. We're going to bring on our friend, Alex Klusterman. He's a friend of the show. He is a fellow podcaster. And also, the Dominion podcast happens to be on Beachhead Media, which if you don't follow or connect with, you should. Beachheadmedia.ca. You can download the app. You can get their show, our show, his wife's show, Pastor Aaron's show. Lots of good stuff. Alex is the teaching pastor at Hill City Baptist Church in Peterborough, Ontario, and the co-host of the Dominion podcast. That's currently where he is in those digs right now. You can also read some great articles at dominionpress.substack.com. I highly recommend you subscribe. Alex is also the chief freedom fuel officer for Resistance Coffee, and he's currently in his work uniform right now. He and his wife, Rebecca, have been married since 2010. They have two girls. Alex, it's always great to spend time with you. Thanks for joining us on The Dispatch.
Thanks for having me, boys. Good to be with you.
Love seeing you, buddy.
So, friend, you recently and your wife, you have resurrected, taken over, revitalized, and rebranded. I didn't even plan that alliteration, by the way. That's not in my notes. It just came to me in a moment of prophetic. It's the solar eclipse. I think the lingering effect.
You can tell you're a pastor.
It's really brought out the charismatic in me. So, I mean, obviously, I'm grateful for the work and for the endeavor and for the delicious coffee that we enjoy and that our listeners get to enjoy. But more than just that, what was the thinking behind the taking over and the resurrecting of Resistance Coffee? Why is it that you guys pursued this particular brand, this particular initiative?
That's a great question. I think there's a couple of reasons. The first is a simple one. We just love coffee. And we got tired of having to, you know, purchase quality coffee from increasingly from people who just hated us, hated our values, hated our way of life, you know. And when the opportunity arose, we thought, you know, we would love to be able to ourselves be drinking coffee that is supplied by people that actually are about what we're about. And we think that other people would like that as well. So I would say there was a genuine love of coffee that my wife and I have. We like specialty coffee. We like fresh roasted coffee. And we were excited to have the opportunity to, you know, bring that to our friends and family and customers and on behalf of, you know, people who love what they love and are against what they're against. And that leads me to the second reason is, I find there's a lot of, in kind of the conservative freedom world, there's no shortage of complaining about the problems. And I would agree with a lot of the criticisms of our culture, but there's a shortage of people actually doing something. And I think one of the things that people can do is just continue to start businesses and get married and have family and go to church and love your actual neighbors and, you know, give yourselves to the things that tyrants typically hate, right? And so I think with Resistance in particular, not only could we be involved in providing a product that we love, specialty coffee, but also in promoting things like family-run small business. And I think as well, an opportunity as a brand to speak to the larger culture. You know, people get hung up on politics, but politics, as we all know, and you guys always say, is downstream from culture. And if you're not involved in the public conversation that is shaping the values of culture, I mean, that's a bad thing. And I think in the United States, there's a lot more examples of that. There's an actual culture war that's taking place. And I think a lot of conservative minded people don't want to get involved in that for a lot of good reasons. Because frankly, we don't want to be involved in other people's business. We just want to be generally left alone. And we don't have this impulse in us to go and try and control people's lives. But the problem is when you disengage, that vacuum gets filled with people who do want to be involved in your life in unhelpful and unhealthy ways. And so we thought, you know what? Let's just try to contribute to promoting the truth and promoting family values and promoting freedom and promoting faith and promoting really what we think are traditional Canadian values in the public space. So it's not a gimmick. It's not just to sell a product. It's that we genuinely believe in these values and we think more people need to be public about them. And I think we need to start supporting businesses who align with our values. And that's a strategy I think not enough people are taking at the moment.
Yeah, well said. And I think, Jeremy Boring from Daily Wire has kind of said, as it pertains to exactly what you're talking about, getting involved in the culture war, how, you know, we talk a big game as conservatives that we believe in the free market, that we believe in enterprise, that we believe in hard work. But then when it comes down to it, a lot of times we're not actually enterprising. We're not actually engaging in creating the type of culture that wins culture wars, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, we not only love the brand, love the coffee, love you as a brother in Christ. So we're excited to see you and your wife take on this this task. But we just love, in essence, the very reason that you guys are getting involved in this. And we hope to, again, on our show, to be a platform for businesses like your own who are getting involved in the culture war, not necessarily through political activism per se, but through actually just creating good culture and working unto the glory of God. So we love that. We're super appreciative of that. Now, Alex, you guys are kind of doing something unique with Resistance, called the Outpost model. So why have you decided to go this unique route? And maybe as you're kind of answering that question, tell us what it's all about. Give our listeners an understanding of how actually they can get involved in bringing people the great coffee that you guys are making.
Yeah. So what we're trying to do at Resistance is we're trying to fuel the resistance with fresh roasted specialty coffee. Well, the resistance in Canada is coast to coast, and we've sold coast to coast, and our customers, people with traditional Canadian values, live coast to coast. And we have a beautiful country geographically, but it's massive. And so one of the obstacles for any business in supplying products or services to their customers is getting over shipping. And so we thought one of the ways that we could get around this is that we could establish what we call outposts all over Canada, and that people, instead of having to go online and order from a website, they could just talk to their friend or family member or someone who goes to their school or church or whatever, who they know is slinging Resistance coffee, and they could give them cash or do an e-transfer and just deal with things organically and informally. And so our hope is to establish a network across the country of people who say, you know what? I definitely love the coffee. And what we do to incentivize that is people who want to be an outpost. If you're in Ontario, it's, if you can get a dozen people together that you can, that would like to purchase coffee, we'll give you a free bag of coffee. You get a couple bucks per bag, and we cover the shipping. So basically, if you're a customer, and someone in Outpost, that bypasses the whole cost of shipping. And if you want to be an Outpost, you get a free bag of coffee with every order. You get a couple bucks, and you don't pay shipping either. So people have been really enthusiastic about this, which we're happy for. I mean, when we were, you know, writing our little whiteboard brainstorms, it sounded good. And when people hear about it, the feedback has been incredibly positive. So we're thankful for that.
Yeah.
So people then they don't place their order through the website. They would, I guess, place the order or just contact whoever is managing the outpost. And then once there's enough, once enough of the people say, here's what we want, then the person who manages the outpost then reaches out to you and says, this is what we need.
Yeah, absolutely. So the outpost person would be in contact with us and they would place an order through a specific portion of the website that we would give them access to. So they would just be doing one order and they would be in touch with whoever wants to purchase it in their area. And we have a list of some of our outposts now on the website and we've got more coming in every day. So if you want to go to the website, resistancecoffee.com, you can see if there's an outpost in your area. And if there's not an outpost in your area and you're interested and you think that, hey, this is something I can do, like it doesn't cost me anything and I get a free bag of coffee and I want to drink Resistance Coffee and I could find, you know, 6, 7, 8 people to buy coffee, get in touch with us. And we'd love to make it work.
Is there, because I want to give as much information as possible, is there a minimum amount of bags or a minimum order when the outpost sends it to you? Like, is you need at least this much coffee to send out to make it worthwhile? And if not, wait? Or is it just whenever an order is ready? What's kind of the, what's your thinking on that?
Yeah. So the way we've structured it to get around shipping in Canada is all the outposts in Ontario need to order a minimum of a dozen. So if you order a dozen, then we throw in a 13th bag for free. And the way that we ship it, it works out that, you know, we can get it to you and we'll cover the whole cost of that shipping. And you can distribute it to whoever's purchased from you from there. Out of province, we have outposts in Alberta and Saskatchewan. I think one in Manitoba now. We do 2 dozen. Now, you can also order coffee. Like coffee, typically fresh roasted coffee, if it's the bags that we sell it in have a gas valve and they're heat sealed and, you know, they're going to be still fresh for at least 3 weeks kind of thing. So it's not like you have to order every single week. So if you have enough people that you can order for 2 weeks or 3 weeks worth, you know, typically it's not an exact science, but I mean, coffee is peaking around day 18 kind of thing. And it doesn't trail off. I mean, the stuff that you're used to getting in the grocery stores, and even if you go to a, you know, a big brand supposed specialty coffee, their coffee's like months old. And so we literally roast every single week and we ship it out within 3 to 4 days of roasting. And you're getting, you can't even drink coffee. You probably don't want to be drinking it within 3 days of roasting. So It's, you know, you want to let it degas. You want to let it sit for a little bit anyways. So you're getting your coffee about as fresh as you possibly could. Mm-hmm. And so yes, out of province, 2 dozen, in province, 1 dozen.
Now, if you were enterprising and you didn't necessarily have the 2 dozen people to sell it to, you still could get it and then hopefully get a customer in base as well, right? Like you could just go ahead and order the 24 bags from you, but then distribute it if somebody reaches out to you. But yeah, anyways,
Or drink a whole lot of coffee yourself.
Or drink a whole lot of coffee.
Oh boy.
Well, that's awesome.
So you guys have, so you guys got some sweet merch so far, and I don't know if you can say anything about the custom mug plans you guys have. Any traction on that? I know you've said some stuff. You've even posted something on social media about connections with that. What's happening with that?
So I'm not going to say too much right now, but it's looking good that we are going to get some sick custom made mugs from a freedom loving family. Nice. And we're hoping to announce those and drop those soon. We've also
Will I be able to sip it on the show like this? Will it be in the shots?
You're going to have to hold it with your whole hand, though. This is a big mug, you know. This is not a teacup, you know.
A bowl. I'll just be...
Yeah. Yeah, awesome. So we've got that and some hats dropping. And, yeah, so check us out. Find what you want. Rep the resistance.
So website is resistancecoffee.com. If people are interested in becoming an outpost, is the website the best place to go, or is there an email address that they need to be contacting?
If you go to the website, there will be a link to get in touch with us, but you can also just email info@resistancecoffee.com.
Love it, okay. Man. Well, thanks again. We love talking to you. We love the behind the scenes talks, and also to promote such a wonderful brand as yours, and hopefully get a lot of fresh coffee into our listeners' hands and subsequently their mouths. So thanks again, brother. Really appreciate it. God bless you.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. So it was good to chat with Alex and have him on. I'm thankful for the work that we're doing and the kind of resistance that they're talking about. Is not like the French Revolution kind of resistance where everyone's head ends up in the guillotine.
No.
The kind of resistance that they're talking about really is faithfulness, right? It's the real resistance is loving your wife and being a good father and having kids and raising them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord, right? The real resistance is faithfully committing to a local church and not handing yourself over to all kinds of fleshly debaucherous activities. Like that's the real resistance, right? The oppressive tyranny that we see in our culture, which in this episode has been highlighted in both New and Old Scotland, is the state will take care of you. The state will protect you. The state will monitor what you say. The state will gather your personal health information. The state will make sure your kids play sports. The state will make sure that you can have your business. The state will make sure you can buy a house. The state will protect you from hearing abusive and hateful, stirring up hatred kind of speech. That's what they want. And the resistance is, no, thank you, right? Mm-hmm. The resistance is, I'll be responsible for my own life. I'll be responsible for my own kids. I will be responsible for what I say, and I will not be treated as a child, and I won't have you as my God dad state to take care of me. I can take care of myself, not in a kind of anti-authoritarian scofflaw way, but in a self-governance, individual rights, freedoms, and responsibilities kind of way. Mm-hmm. And this is precisely the kind of resistance that, not just in buying coffee, but in the way that you live your life, we are extolling you to join in. The kind of resistance that takes your freedoms and your responsibilities very seriously, because there can be no freedom without responsibility, that takes them seriously and honors the Lord in all that you do. And we want to encourage you to be more and more part of that resistance. If that means you need to move, if that means you need to adapt your family life, if that means you need to drop down to one car or a smaller house so that you can take your education of your children seriously, if that means a relocation, if that means starting a business, whatever that means, we would challenge you to join the resistance, which again, isn't really resistance. It's just a 2,000-year-old faithfulness that Christ has always called his people to. So that's what we are also calling you to join in and to join us as we seek to be a part of that good 2,000-year-old faithful resistance here in Canada.
Yeah, just think about the motif of the Exodus, which is the grand picture throughout Scripture. It's always held up as this grand picture of the arc of Scripture. It's right out of tyranny and slavery into freedom, right? As Christians, we're removed from the tyranny and slavery to sin into the freedom of bond servitude to Christ, right? And that's the glory of it, that we're not just for freedom for the sake of license, but for the freedom for the sake of liberty, correctly understood. And in the Exodus motif, why are God's people, the Israelites under the leadership of Moses and Aaron, resisting the tyranny of the Pharaoh? Well, it's so that they can go out and serve and worship God. That is the type of freedom that the scriptures know about. That is the type of freedom that is true freedom, because when the Son sets you free, you will be free and indeed. And it's for freedom that Christ has set you free. Stand firm, therefore, and do not submit again to a yoke of slavery. Till next time, God bless.
Liberty Dispatch has been brought to you in partnership with Liberty Coalition Canada and Christian Week, and has been produced by SDG Media. You can find all things Liberty Coalition Canada at libertycoalitioncanada.com.